funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take for teenagers to start thinking like adults? There is no substitute for life experience, of course, but many parents and educators worry that today's middle and high school students are somehow missing out on developing the kinds of critical thinking skills that give meaning and value to all the facts and information they are learning in school. Applying up-to-the-minute research on teen brains and how they work from the UTD Center for Brain Health, a new pilot program in the Dallas Independent School District has achieved remarkable improvements in reasoning and memory skills, and results are evident after just 10 45-minute training sessions. Dr. Sandra Chapman and Dr. Jacqueline Gamino are researchers at the UTD Center for Brain Health. Jennifer Tecklenburg is a teacher in the Dallas Independent School District who has seen this program in action with her own students. Ladies, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
What tells you that our kids need help with reasoning skills, Dr. Gamino?
Well, we have a lot of evidence from across the country that children are not performing where they used to be. Back in the 80s, we led the developed countries in ability to use critical thinking skills and problem solving. And at this point in time, I think we are 23rd out of 29 in developing countries. So we know it's not just a Texas problem, it's a United States problem.
Is there something, Dr. Chapman, that we used to teach without even realizing it that contributed to critical thinking skills?
You know, that's the big question, is why is it that now we think that kids aren't being able to reason? And I think there's not a simple answer to that. But we know one of the big things is technology and information overflow. If you can imagine, too much information actually hinders our ability to think about things deeply. So knowing when to block and to do that, to think deeper about information, has really blocked the kids. So I think it's this instant information, superficial processing, and a lot about the tests that are being given that rewards how many facts you know versus how well you're able to think about those facts.
Jennifer, I think about my kids doing school reports, and they go online and they do find 25,000 websites. But they're overwhelmed and don't know which one to trust and where to go. Is that the kind of thing that you're seeing with your students?
When they do research on the internet, they tend to believe the first thing they see or the first thing they hear.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's pretty common to teenagers in general. I don't think just specific to this time, but I think it's exaggerated because they have so many sources available to them, and they're not able to filter them.
And I guess if they don't have critical reasoning skills, they can't fully absorb any of the facts they're learning because they're just bits of information.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Let's talk about why middle school is a good time to address this problem, because I think we all know people who are 45 years old that don't think critically, and, mm-hmm. and we know some really smart mm-hmm. 8-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Is there something about the brain at this stage of life that makes it a really good time to attack this?
Well, adolescence, we know now through brain imaging that adolescence is one of the most critical periods of brain development in our lives, almost as critical as it was in infancy. And so this is a wonderful time for children to develop new skills, cognitive skills that are higher level that they will be needing as adults.
Yeah, I mean, just think about it. We didn't even know 8 years ago that the brain is undergoing more change, as Dr. Gamino said, than any other time in our life except for the first 2 months. And these changes are what's happening to support critical thinking, problem solving, judgment. And yet we're actually building a brain that doesn't do that at all, but is how much it knows again, if I can restate that. So our school system, neuroengineers our brain, and when I say our school system, I'm not meaning to point fingers because we're all in this together.
We're doing the best we can.
We're all doing the best we can. Us teachers, it's going to take us all working together, but all of us are teaching a brain that is not building these frontal lobes. So we know, for example, in reading, the brain is kind of positioned pivotally to develop reading skills in elementary school, kindergarten through second grade. So now we know from just within the last 5 years that the middle school years is when it's primed to be optimal, and we're doing exactly the opposite in terms of how we're teaching them both as parents and teachers.
So are we looking at one of these famous, or maybe I should say infamous, windows here? If we don't teach this during the teen years, does it get harder to acquire the kind of critical thinking skills that we need?
Well, we don't know for sure, but that could be a possibility. Many things are easier during those windows. It's not that you can never learn to do something later on in life, but it's easier to learn it at certain epochs in life. And this is one of those epochs where the frontal lobes are developing to a great extent, and so anything that we can do to strengthen the connections to the frontal lobes by teaching kids how to reason is really important.
Yeah, what's interesting about brain development is the frontal lobes, and you're going to hear us talk a lot about that, that area of the brain, is the last to develop. So it's, you know, middle school through age 25. So the car companies actually know that, right? So because we know that kids can't get a rent a car until mm-hmm. after 25 because judgment, quick thinking, making wise decisions. So that's why it's important for us. So the frontal lobes are the last to develop, and it's the first to go when we retire. So Dr. Gamino is exactly right. I love what you said, the critical window, but it's never too late. So high school's not too late, early 20s, early 30s, so we never give up on developing the brain. And I think that's the most exciting thing for us involved in brain science at the Center for Brain Health is our brain is the most modifiable part of our whole body. So we can develop this critical thinking really with short-term intensive training at different stages of our life.
And so do you actually observe physiological or chemical changes within the brain after a student has gone through this program as compared with another student?
Well, we're in the process of researching that particular aspect of the program. We have used the program previously in children with ADHD, and we have, by using EEGs before the program and then after the program, we have seen changes in their brainwave activity. And we're just beginning to look at that same aspect of potential change in these typically developing middle school children.
I think that's the exciting thing for the work we're doing at the Center for Brain Health is that we're not just hyping something to say, ooh, this is bad, but we're looking through brain imaging studies, what's the evidence, through diagnosing, through developing training, what exactly is changing. And it's not just what's changing on our measures, but what's changing in the classroom and what's changing in brain so that we can know what should be implemented in the schools and across the country and not to hype the wrong thing.
So, Jennifer, aside from test scores improving based on the Center for Brain Health's measurements, do you see a change in the way students react and respond in class and the way they participate?
Anytime you can have a student become more confident in his ability to make decisions and that he has something of value to contribute, that's always going to be a successful situation. And I think that's one of the things that the strategies that are taught allows the students to develop is it's okay to take a risk. It's okay. You know, you've been taught enough to know that you can make a decision about whether it's an academic decision or otherwise.
So you can actually see in them that they recognize the change.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. They do.
We are talking today about teenagers and brain health and developing critical reasoning skills. Let's talk about the program itself and how it works. You started with kids with ADHD, and my understanding is, because we've talked about that on this program before, it was remarkable, the changes that you were able to make. How is the program structured?
Well, the program is structured so that we go into the classroom. We have a team of brain trainers that work with the children and teach them the strategies. So we work within their classroom period, and we go through a hierarchical approach to higher order thinking. And we very carefully have mapped out exactly, you know, what these steps are and how the children can achieve them best.
So where do you start?
Well, we start with the very simple idea of how do you know what's most important in information? What do you inhibit and what do you really focus on? So we call that bounce it. And what we teach the children is to actually bounce out what's not important. So they actually physically cross out the information that is superfluous or unnecessary.
So let me just kind of add, this is something that is really counter to what's typically done, because you typically ask kids, show me what's important and underline it. Well, when you look at their textbooks, guess what? Everything's underlined. And so they overlearn and they study. But if you say, okay, 50 to 60% of this information, after you read it once, I want you to go back and filter out, block information, get rid of it so that you're studying less to learn more. And at first they're like, but it's there. It's got to be important. But pretty quickly they learn, oh, my gosh, I can be so much more efficient by knowing what to block. And we've actually shown different parts of the brain active when you're trying to select information to learn and blocking information. And so that's what when we say we're building the frontal lobes, we're building both types of skills. And so it's different from what is typically done in kids that are having problems where they're trying to learn too much.
Well, do you find, Jennifer, that when students come into your classroom from the elementary school years, are they just used to being told what's important?
I don't know that they're used to being told what's important, but there's so much of what they read has the same structure, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily confident in how to select what's important on their own or with a different type of a text, whether that's a different content area or at a higher level, and they get overwhelmed mm-hmm. by that.
And let me say one of the other things after this part of it where it's bounce it, the second area that we look at is we very quickly move to what we call integrated thinking, which is where A plus B equals C. So that means that A is part of the facts and B is part of the facts, but C isn't there. So you've got to come up with a new idea by combining all of this information and abstract a new meaning. Kids today, if you ask them a question, they look in the text and say, well, I've got the answer has to be written here or I don't know it. So within the first 2 to 3 sessions, they have to come up with something that's not on the printed page. It is an abstracted idea either from something else they've learned or from some experience that they've learned. But so it's A plus B. So the critical thinking is C is not on the page. And they are really bummed when they think, I can't go in here and circle the answer, because that's what they've been trained. Question, answer, but not, let me see how I can use this information to form new ideas and new ideas in very innovative ways.
So how many sessions does it take before they're starting to say, okay, I'm getting this?
It typically takes 3 to 4 sessions sometimes, and definitely by the 5th session, and we work with them for 10 sessions. And they sort of resent our presence in the beginning, but they quickly learn that we're teaching them something that they haven't learned before. Mm-hmm. It's not something that they're going to get out of a typical classroom, because we're not teaching them what to learn, but we're teaching them how to learn, and they're not usually taught that.
Now, are parents delighted that their kids are part of this, or do they say, I want my child being given the facts and I want the specific subject matter, subject area study taking place?
The parents that of the students that I teach have been very accepting of the program. They, when we speak to them about it and explain to them that it's a program that does exactly what Dr. Gamineau said, it teaches them how to think, how to read anything and understand what the information is about, not just understand how to fill in the answers to questions. They're very supportive.
Do you see a change in how they work collaboratively with each other?
I think because they've all been taught the exact same, using that pyramid, that same set of steps, they trust that they all know it. And so I think the answer is they definitely work collaboratively because they trust each other.
Jennifer Tecklenburg is a middle school teacher in DISD. Dr. Jacqueline Gamineau and Dr. Sandra Chapman are here from the UTD Center for Brain Health. We are talking about teaching young teenagers critical reasoning skills. You can join the conversation now by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, announcing a new 9-month intensive CFP certificate program starting in January in Plano. You can learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about teaching critical reasoning skills to teenagers with Dr. Sandra Chapman and Dr. Jacqueline Gamineau of the UTD Center for Brain Health and DISD middle school teacher Jennifer Tecklenburg. They've all taken part in a pilot program that is trying to impart these skills to our students. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. This came up last week in a similar discussion, I guess, talking about ways to get kids off the endless adolescence that seems to be plaguing America today. The idea of hormones. A lot of people assume that when you get to the teenage years, hormones take over and you ought to be assumed to be incapable of thinking in rational ways because so much is going on in your body. Can you talk about the truth or not of that statement?
Well, it's true that hormones play a very important role in developing our bodies and in puberty. But in fact, the brain is undergoing so much development and so much chemical change at that time in life that it isn't just the hormones. It's the asynchrony in the brain. As adults, our brains are very synchronous. They might work more like an orchestra and kind of speak to each area very, very synchronously. However, in the adolescent brain, it's kind of the opposite. The emotional center in particular, the amygdala, it tends to be overly active while the frontal lobes, which are undergoing quite a bit of development, are underactive. And that's why we see teenagers who make some really strange decisions, who tend to be emotional, tend to get hot-headed at the drop of a hat.
And they actually haven't found a relationship between the hormone levels and risky behavior, if you will. But it is, as Dr. Gamineau said, this asynchrony between a brain that wants to do excitement. Teenagers will do things in this period of their life that they wouldn't do anything like that before or afterwards. As adults, they'll say, you wouldn't believe what I did. Because their frontal lobes aren't really coordinated yet to say, ooh, not a good idea. This is too dangerous for life.
There are people who say, I think I could teach, but I would never teach middle school. People are terrified of this era. Can you give us some insight on the great things about teaching that age group and also the things that you find to be the most challenging?
I think it's exciting that they are at a very vulnerable point and able to really fluctuate in how they come in every single day. And sometimes you look at them and say, why did you do that? And they look right back at you and say, I have no idea. And they really don't have any idea. But they can learn so quickly. And when they learn something, they tend to either remember it or they want to remember it. And I think that's important.
Yeah, Jennifer's such a great teacher, and we've had such great experience in the DISD schools with this program. And it's our vision that teachers in middle school would almost embrace it just like kindergarten teachers. I can't wait because these are the minds to build for the future of tomorrow. It is truly, if you think about the most vulnerable time of our whole life, and you're right, they want to put them in a closet. And it's the worst thing we can do. And we need to embrace it like Jennifer. She's just been amazing to work with.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Nan in Dallas. Hi, Nan.
Hi, Chris. I always love your show.
Thank you. I feel
like you're a friend.
Oh, thanks.
Listen, I was wondering if your panel can draw any correlations between the decline in critical thinking you're talking about and the introduction of standardized testing through the public schools. And then kind of as an adjunct to that, I'm wondering if they see any difference in the levels of critical thinking between kids who go through public schools and kids who go through private schools.
Thanks for your call.
Well, there may be a correlation. Standardized tests are important because it is important that kids have a basic level of knowledge, but there's been so much emphasis put on it, on these standardized tests throughout the nation, where teachers' pay is dependent upon them, they're, even keeping their jobs, that there's almost too much emphasis on standardized tests. But that is probably not the only reason that we have a lack of reasoning skills. It could just be the influx of all our technology. It could be that kids go off by themselves and play these video games for hours upon end without interacting and developing reasoning skills. As far as the difference between public and private schools, we have seen a difference depending upon the private school. Many private schools, of course, do not use the same types of standardized testing. They don't have the emphasis on them, and they do focus on some of the higher order thinking skills that some of the public schools are lacking.
But I think what's exciting for us is in the public schools, they are so willing to learn and believe in themselves that that's why we've seen kind of a ramp up very quickly. So when you give them the extra attention and care, I think the potential is there in both places.
What do you measure on day one of the program, and what do you measure at the end of those 10 sessions?
We use our experimental measures that were developed primarily by Dr. Chapman's work with traumatically brain-injured children, where we measure their ability to understand and convey the bigger picture, the deeper information of a text. And we see that when they are tested prior to the study, prior to the SMART sessions, that they're very fact-based. They'll give you back almost all the details. And then at the end, it often gives me goosebumps to see how these children have changed over the course of 1 month in 10 sessions, that they are conveying deeper level of thought. They're showing that they are really thinking about information in a new and different way that they weren't a month ago.
And yeah. And you saw, I'm sorry, a 30% increase or improvement typically?
Yes.
At least from just 10 sessions, strategy-based. But this test that we've developed at the Center for Brain Health, the test of strategic learning, what's interesting about it is it's, you know, the different texts that we use are expository, things like you would use in the classroom. And we don't say, tell me back everything you just learned, but we say, in a nutshell, I want you to give me the synopsis of it. And kids are like, oh, my gosh, I'm not used to that. So it actually pushes them to use abstracted ideas, higher-level vocabulary, more complex language. And we can almost tell when parents come to us, and we've done this measure, we can see how is their kid approaching learning, whether it's history text, science text, literature, or whatever. For example, one of the students that we saw that was 13 had been in talented and gifted classes through elementary school, fifth grade, sixth grade. Sixth grade began having a lot of trouble. And studying, the parents said they're working so hard. You know, they're studying 6 to 7 hours and they can't get through their homework, studying. So we did the measure and we said, we can see what's wrong. They gave back almost verbatim the 600-word text, trying to memorize, overlearn, didn't know how to synthesize, couldn't abstract in a nutshell. And we show them, and they're like, you're absolutely right. That's what's happening. So the brain gets overwhelmed. So it's learn it, lose it. You learn it for a test, and it's gone. Our brain hates to learn that way.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Greg in Dallas. Hey, Greg.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Just really two quick questions. For those parents who don't have these resources available, what resources would you recommend so that we can take the next step with our children at home? And how would we get our current school districts or involved with a program like this?
What school district are you in?
In Grand Prairie.
Grand Prairie? Well, we actually have, this program was funded by the state, so we are looking for schools. DISD is a big one, but we're also doing it in surrounding schools. So if you're in the middle school, are you?
Let's bring him back on.
Oh,
Greg, are you you have a child in middle school?
Yes, I will have one going to middle school next year.
Okay.
You may call Dr. Gamineau, and perhaps your school could be one of the ones that we enroll in the study.
Great. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Can you talk, Jennifer, did you go into this a skeptic? Did you think to yourself, this is definitely going to work? Were you surprised by the amount of change that you saw?
Well, when we first went into it, I didn't know anything about the students were split up into the three different groups, mm-hmm. and I didn't have, they had told me nothing about which group was which, and it was all entirely in their hands. So I wasn't skeptical because I knew that they came referred by people that I trusted. But I was interested to see how they would apply, you know, just how the program would work.
Yeah.
And I was very pleasantly surprised at how the students took to the program and how they've been very willing to adopt the strategies that they're taught and utilize them in other other classes, not just in my classroom and not just during the program.
Have you been able to adjust the way you teach once students have been through this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a lot of ways that I've tried to continue using the same language.
Yeah.
I think when you, if a middle school student especially is taught something that is similar to what they already know, then they don't necessarily learn it because they think they already know it. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of tune it out. But using a different set of language in order to teach something really opens that up for the kids. And so I've tried to continue using that language so that they continue using those strategies.
And when Jennifer was talking about the three groups, we initially did a pilot study last year in her classroom where the children were either in a control group or in the SMART group, and she had no idea which group was which.
And SMART is the name of the program,
not classifying
students.
Yes, they were completely randomized. We had no idea how well they would be. They had done on our preliminary testing. And so we wanted to see whether or not it was just simply adult interaction with these children in a very small group that was making the changes, or if it was the strategies that we're teaching. And SMART stands for Strategic Memory and Reasoning Training. And so what we found was that the children who were in the SMART group did considerably better than the children who were not.
That's going to be so exciting.
It was very exciting. But we went back and we did the SMART strategies with all the students after that because we felt the results warranted it.
So you're still in a pilot phase. What does this cost to give this to any individual student?
Well, because the state is funding us, we have found that the cost to be fairly reasonable. I mean, we do have to train the people who go in to run the program, and we feel that it's under $500 per student is approximately what the cost is, including the brain imaging portion. Mm-hmm.
But right now we're doing the imaging. We're doing other cognitive measures to see does it spill over to other frontal lobe measures like inhibition, problem solving, complex nonverbal reasoning. What about math reasoning, social reasoning? So we're looking at the spillover effects. So it's costly right now to show it. Again, we don't want to hype it up and get it in all the schools until we know exactly what. Some kids may need more than 10 sessions, so we're looking to do booster sessions. Can we do some type of Facebook on learning so that kids can turn in their homework and we can see when they start to fall off of learning these reasoning skills?
And based on the ADHD studies, which are at least a couple years old now, are you able to tell how long the effect lasts?
Well, the exciting part thing that we've found with our children who went through the program at the center through what we called our SMART camp, we retested several of them that we were able to bring back at 6 months and again at a year, and we found that their skills had not decreased at all. They were either remaining the same or actually getting a little bit better.
And our parents, have become the greatest advocates. They're like, I can't even believe this. Like one of them, it was a 15-year-old. They said he just couldn't do anything. And now what used to take 6 hours, he can now literally do in an hour. And it's held on so much that he'd been an A student, gradually dropping to a low C student, and is back to A and learning. And she said, so creative. I mean, he's leading the class in terms of creative thinking that had really been lost in the middle school.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll speak next with Ray in Dallas. Hello, Ray.
Hello. I'm a former DISD teacher, and especially in specializing in math, or used to. You're finding that a lot of the higher-order thinking skills that we've given, such as doing proofs in geometry, as opposed to what now is like fill in the block or recognizing that, is that part of the reason why we may be losing some of this ability in our children to critically think? And I'll just go ahead and take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
You know, we're very interested in reasoning, what's shared across different types of reasoning. At the current time, we're not looking at math reasoning, but one of the scientists that was part of this National Science Foundation think tank that Dr. Gamino and I were part of found the same thing with math reasoning that we were finding with complex verbal reasoning, that if you give kids concrete math examples versus abstraction, like where you're talking kind of the proofs to kind of work through, that even when you gave them 6, 7, 8 examples, they never abstracted the principle to spill over. But if you gave them proofs and they were involved in kind of the project-based learning, they learned it, they held on to it. So it was exactly what we were seeing, is this isolated fact-based learning didn't spill over and generalize to other types of learning. So, yes, we do suspect that, and it's going to be part of our studies in the next year.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have an email here from Bill who writes, I noticed that in many teachers' tests, there are always some questions about facts that are not necessarily important, but designed to see if the student actually read the whole assignment. This seems to me to be one of the big problems in getting critical thinking skills developed. Students try to memorize all the text because they don't know what item will be asked about. And asks your thoughts on that, and I'll address that to you, Jennifer.
The fact and opinion questions you see are often determining which statement is a fact and which is an opinion. And they don't they come from passages, but they don't necessarily have anything to do with the meaning of the passage. And that is would understandably be very confusing to, you know, to a student who maybe then is also struggling with understanding the meaning of a passage. That's going to make it even more challenging.
Yeah, and, you know, just, again, fact-based learning. Our facts are changing so rapidly. You know, for example, just in brain science, what I learned in graduate school, many of it has been completely reversed. So if we can move away from verbatim learning, and kids today can instantly look up thousands of facts, but if we can begin to teach them how do you use those facts to form abstract new ways of thinking, It's it's not to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Dr. Gammon was always like, we've got to have facts, right? You've got to have...
You're not anti-fact.
Yeah, we're not anti-fact. You do definitely have to have some facts because you can't abstract from emptiness either. So facts are important, but, you know, even asking a student to paraphrase facts, they have a hard time. They're like, put it in your own words. But I can repeat it back. Exactly. Can't do it.
Dr. Sandra Chapman, Dr. Jacqueline Gamineau, and educator Jennifer Tecklenburg are my guests. We're talking about providing critical reasoning skills to middle schoolers. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372. You can find information online if you Google the UTD Center for Brain Health. We'll be back in just a minute.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education, announcing a new 9-month intensive CFP certificate program starting in January in Plano. You can learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about providing critical reasoning skills to middle schoolers. Jennifer Tecklenburg is a teacher at Rusk Middle School in the Dallas Independent School District. Dr. Sandra Chapman and Dr. Jacqueline Gamineau are with the UTD Center for Brain Health, which will be holding its annual The Brain and Owner's Guide lecture series starting in February. You can find information about that at centerforbrainhealth.org. If you want to be part of our conversation, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phones to Mike in Fort Worth. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My playing devil's advocate here, I guess I don't really have an opinion, but being a lawyer, I can argue either side. But the last program I heard on education was complaining about the fact that there wasn't enough factual information being given to children, that educators had all been given degrees on education and how to teach, but that unlike Japan and other countries, we really weren't teaching our children any facts. Do you care to comment on that?
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know, this is Dr. Chapman from Brain Health. I don't think that's accurate. We are teaching a lot of facts, even as scientists. I mean, it's in Science Magazine almost monthly about how in chemistry, we're teaching facts. We're teaching it almost as if they're simple answers, but not how to use those to solve problems. So, you know, the emphasis really is on facts. And we're learning as much as other countries, but what's changing is the innovations and how you use them to solve new problems.
Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Thanks very much for your call. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Matthew in Carrollton. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, yes. I heard earlier on the program your guests were talking about gaming and how a lot of kids just go off for hours and hours on end. And I was wondering, though, what their thoughts were on games that actually promote strategic thinking, such as Civilization and the old Myst-type games.
Thanks for calling. Not all video games are created alike, certainly.
That's true. Some video games do promote the reasoning and thinking skills, but the vast majority probably do not. And when children are playing in isolation and not communicating with other people, then they don't get the feedback that they need that really does help build the positive reasoning skills and critical thinking that they need for everyday life.
You know, we're definitely in a new time zone in terms of thinking about gaming, and we actually are using thinking about Second Life, which is like Civilization, and developing our own way to maybe have a virtual reality classroom. If you could imagine students responding through their avatar, so the shy student who's smart but scared may be willing to respond. So, I think there's definitely ways to take it, but I agree with Dr. Gamineau. Most of them are not, but you've given some examples of some that perhaps do.
What do you find, Jennifer? What things are competing for your students' attention when you have an assignment to read something or to work on a project? What else, when they get home, is calling for them to pay attention?
Our students have a lot of challenges at home because they often live in situations that are not conducive to quiet study areas. A lot of them end up taking care of younger siblings or cousins or neighbors. And they have a lot of real-life responsibilities that I think we sometimes don't give them credit for. Mm-hmm. And so the studying for an hour by yourself is often moved to the backside of, of the priority list. And so if we're able to, sometimes we have to make the most out of the time that they're at school because it may be the only time they get some of that. But when they become interested and engaged, you find them coming to the school saying, oh, I saw this on the TV. I was watching the History Channel. Or they start doing things that are far more educational just on their own based off of their interest and their confidence in the fact that it's okay for them to be interested in something that's more academic.
Is there after-school care in middle school or programs that are there sort of every day, or is it just that they join a club and maybe on Wednesdays they do something after school?
We have, I think, what's probably typical for after-school activities, a lot of sports. And we have a strong band program. We have a strong art program. We've had technology clubs in the past. We've had different book clubs, those kinds of things that are generally a couple days a week after school.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Alexi in Alvarado. Hi, Alexi.
Yes. I have a question. This is my first time listening to your program, and thank you for taking my call.
Welcome.
I would like to know how an adult dyslexic would be able to get in touch with someone regarding this program for them to utilize that for themselves.
Are you working with adults at this point?
No, I'm not a teacher. I was asking myself.
Thank you, Alexi. I was asking actually our guests so that they can respond to that. Thank you very much for your call.
Yes, for healthy people, we actually do what we call a brain health physical. We want people to be thinking at every stage of their life, what can I be doing to maximize my brain function? So a brain health physical would look at your ability actually to think strategically. And it's interesting with people with dyslexia, we actually see that they can actually sometimes be better at abstracting meaning because they're great gap fillers because they can't always read the details. So they're constantly using these higher order strategies. But brain health physical would give us some insight, and then we could give you some tips for how to utilize that if that is a problem in terms of how you're thinking abstractly. So it matters in middle school, and it matters even more in adulthood till the end of our lives to keep our mind mentally active.
You mentioned every phase of life, and sometimes people think about the decline of the brain as happening in older age, and so it's something they don't assume they have to give much thought to until later. And I know this is something you're sort of passionate about disproving.
Yes, Chris, thank you. We have this whole idea and it's being said that our brain is optimal at 20. And I say, if your brain's optimal at 20, you haven't been around 20-year-olds lately, that there actually are major ways that our brain gets better and better. And one of these ways is this ability to abstract and problem solve. When we see mentally robust people in their 80s and 90s, it's that they've kept their frontal lobes very active. This strategic attention of selecting and blocking, A plus B equals C, critical thinking, and then innovations help mentally active people or get better and better at that. They're better than they were in their 20s, 40s, and even 50s. So it's just that we treat our mind, oh, well, you know, he's 70. And they act like slippage and mental function is okay for us. Brain health fitness is the most important thing we can do. We didn't know 5 years ago that you could do more to change your brain than heart, skin, teeth, all the things we get checkups for. We want people to be very proactive. We're at the Center for Brain Health. We're actually on a task force to define for Texas what is brain health fitness, and perhaps Texas will lead the way in defining this.
It'd be nice for us to be number one in something other yes. than something negative when it comes to brain health and education.
You know, and I think Texas right now is rated 46th. But if we begin to implement strategies like this, I think we can make major headway in solving the national crisis on being, as Dr. Gamino said, 23rd, 24th out of 29th in critical thinking. We can change it. And working with teachers like Rusk and Jennifer.
And Jennifer and Dr. Gamino, maybe you can both respond to this. Are there things that you've learned through the pilot program that you said, okay, let's adjust this, let's tinker with that?
Yes, with each new group of children, we see differences, we see things that we can improve upon, and if we feel that we've tried to teach them something that nobody's getting, then we go back and we tweak the program just a little bit. But it has improved significantly over the past 3 years, which is when we started the program, and I think each class gives us more and more information.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I noticed when we continued to implement the program is when they went through the program, they wrote in response to the questions that they were asked, they wrote significant amounts of information. And middle school students, you know, like to sometimes be lazy and write a little bit. And so it's really given me kind of a proof that they can write a lot, and they do have a lot to say, and it's not necessarily a lot just regurgitating facts. It's a lot of thinking about those facts, and so it's been in some ways easier for me to go back to them and say, now, come on, you know, this is a sentence or two. I know that you have more there, and we can prove that because they've done it before.
Yeah, that's great. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Cole in Fort Worth. Hi, Cole.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine, thank you.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call, and I'm just going to jump into it. I'm a third-year medical student down here in Fort Worth, Texas, and I think a lot of comments are translatory to kind of what we experience of just memorization and regurgitation. And I think a lot of people can say that it's good to develop a foundation, but the creative problem-solving element is severely lacking within the first 2 years of school. To a large extent, and we see it as a hoop we have to jump through. But, you know, schools like Duke, for example, who took an additional year to add towards clinical experience because they see it as that's where the creative thinking actually occurs. I guess I wanted to see what your input was on the effect of higher education and the possible adaptability in that arena to implement these programs.
Interesting question. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. I spoke actually at a medical school just several months ago and talked about this ability to abstract, and they said, I wish you could help us, could test our incoming medical students. They didn't talk about their curriculum, which you're bringing up, but they said, we always pick the ones that make the highest grades on the MCAT, and it doesn't correspond at all with the ones that make the best doctors. So absolutely, at every stage, I mean, doctors now used to have to memorize all these pharmacological drug reactions. Now, boop, 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 you have it instantly at your fingertips. So it needs our curriculum needs to move at every stage, engineering, medicine, science, brain science, to more problem solving and less about facts, because facts change so dramatically. I don't even know what facts I can teach you today that you're going to need 2 years from now. So thank you for your insight into that.
And I've heard from business people as well. I do a lot of traveling and often hear how frustrating it is for managers who have wonderfully brilliant employees, but if they can't find an answer in the manual, they don't know what to do. They can't solve the problem. So I think it's a universal problem that we all need to address and all be thinking about.
Jennifer, if there was anything that you could change about the preparation students have before they walk into your classroom for the first time, what would it be?
That they were taught not, I think there's a foundation of facts that that they need to learn. But like has been stated, they cannot learn all the facts. We cannot teach them all the facts in 45 minutes a day that we have with them. And so if they came into the classroom willing to embrace the challenges of finding information out and problem solving and working together as a team to do that, and we didn't have to teach them that, then they would be so much farther ahead.
Given that right now this is not available to every student in Texas, and it sounds like a lot of people would love for their kids to have access to this, is there any value whatsoever to putting out some sort of DIY steps for parents and teachers who want to introduce some of these ideas? Or does it have to be administered by a professional?
Right now, we want it administered correctly so we can, so that we can get the evidence. But I don't think it's going to be that long. I mean, the state, Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst is coming. Everyone wants to improve education. We're all in this together, brain scientists, teachers, educators, legislators. It's like we all want it. So I think we have an opportunity in Texas to do something really great. And I think we're talking a year away. But if you do come to the lecture series, you will get some good ideas. We'll probably be doing a special lecture on the evidence from this within the year. So, look at the Center for Brain Health website and see, because we want to get the information out. We want to train people. What we don't want to do is hype it too early.
So you want to know that you've got evidence that everything works.
Yeah, because you know what? The TEA, Texas Education Agency, is spending literally billions of dollars on programs with no evidence. So we want evidence of when it works, what time, how long. Is it fourth grade? I loved your question of if they came to your classroom. So how early do we start with kind of this higher order thinking? How much do we need with strategies? So those are a lot of things that we're not going to wait till we have all the answers. I mean, we're ready. That's why we're implementing it in the schools, but it's close.
Dr. Sandra Chapman and Dr. Jacqueline Gamino, are here from the UTD Center for Brain Health. Jennifer Tecklenburg is a teacher at Rusk Middle School in DISD. We've been talking today about improving critical thinking skills. If you're looking for more information, you might try the centerforbrainhealth.org. You can find that online and check out the lecture series, The Brain and Owner's Guide, which begins in February. Ladies, it's been great to have you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.